Welcome into Lucky 13. My name is Chris, and I've been watching the news this week and trying to see what everybody's talking about and paying attention and what's getting the most ink, as they'd say back in the day. And if I'm being honest with you, the big story this week, it's the Bitcoin ETFs. The reality is the world has just never seen ETF flows like these. But it doesn't really get me excited. $1.5 billion in just the last week into these Bitcoin ETFs, and I'm not really that interested. And I think maybe the same might be true for you, because maybe deep down we know that while it's interesting, and maybe we could get more into what it means for Bitcoin itself and the network in a bit, but it's not really the signal, is it? It's a symptom of a larger macro environment that really just changed this week. So that's what we're going to dig into, is massive. This week is a historic moment for the overall macroeconomic environment. Because after moving in lockstep for the last 2 years to raise interest rates in hopes of controlling inflation, the world's central bank planners are now diverging on how they're going to ease. The big question, right, was when would the Fed ease? Well, what about all the other banks? And Canada made the first move this week.
Now to the Bank of Canada. They are the first G7 country to cut interest rates, lowering their main rate to 4.75%, a 25 basis point cut. Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem saying that it is reasonable to expect the markets.
Reasonable to expect further cuts. Let's actually play another clip since that one was a little bugged, because they do play a little bit of audio from the central manager.
The Bank of Canada says it's time for a change.
Monetary policy no longer needs to be as restrictive. In other words, it's appropriate to lower our policy interest rate.
So that's the governor of the Bank of Canada. You see, it's appropriate to lower our interest rate. There's an interesting kind of pre-assumption being made here that interest rates should come down at all and that interest rates must come down. They're not necessarily that historically high right now. But just baked into the conversation since the rate hikes begun was when will rates come down? And it was just assumed rate hikes would only be temporary. And now the assumption is they will continue to lower. And he just said, yeah, it's probably appropriate to expect that too.
Needs to be as restrictive. In other words, it's appropriate to lower our policy interest rate.
Now, what's ironic about this is some of the signals would indicate it isn't appropriate, right? But there are other economic pressures that force them to do this. We'll talk about that.
The first cut in 4 years, taking the key interest rate to 4.75%.
If we continue to see inflation pressures easing, it is reasonable to expect that there will be further cuts in interest rates.
The move suggests inflation is finally coming under control, tumbling from its peak of 8.1% 2 years ago to 2.7%.
All right, we'll talk about if inflation's coming under control in a moment, but the Bank of Canada wasn't alone in their move to lower the rate.
Well, the European Central Bank cutting interest rates today after holding at record highs of 4% for about 9 months. To break it all down, what the ECB decision means for the Fed, Yahoo Finance's very own Jennifer Schomburger is here with the latest. Jen.
Hey, Jen.
Good morning, Shauna. The European Central Bank cut rates for the first time in 5 years, lowering its key deposit rate by a quarter percentage point to 3.75% from a record high of 4%. The move marks the first major central bank to cut rates since a surge in inflation following the pandemic kicked off a global rate hiking cycle.
Now, the thing is, last week we talked about stagflation. Well, here's why all this matters. The decisions by these banks, this is all happening while the Fed is still expected to keep rates where they're at for now, but for how much longer? We'll know by next episode if the Fed's going to cut rates or not, but it's expected they're going to keep them. But these economies are being brought to the brink of recession, with inflation still running hotter than they'd like. They're being brought to the brink of recession, and that's why they're having to lower rates, not because they've necessarily been successful in their supposed attempt to lower inflation. Here's why it matters for Bitcoin. With these central managers lowering their rates, it's actually bullish news for Bitcoin, because really Bitcoin is the ultimate liquidity absorber. When there's liquidity to go around, Bitcoin will suck it up. And as the rates lower, it will increase market liquidity. These ETFs, they just had their second best week since launch. Why do you suppose that is? People already were kind of betting where this was going. And the post-halvening scarcity hasn't really hit yet. We're only 3% into this halvening cycle right now. So the scarcity factor hasn't really taken effect yet. Now, because there are larger headwinds out there, I think all of this supports my analysis from last episode. The easy money will artificially stimulate economic activity. That, not maybe at first, but over time, will create inflation. Inflation is an increase in the money supply, including credit. And now you have more money chasing the same amount of goods and services, which will dilute the value of each monetary unit. We haven't really fixed the supply chain. We haven't solved the trucker crisis. And if we start using more gas, the Saudis will raise the price. They've already decided to cut. Oil's down because recession is setting in and demand is down. The Saudis just cut production of oil and demand is still down. If demand were to reverse, which it might, if money were to get easier, which it's about to do all around the world all at once, the Fed might wait one more month. You know, my bet would be July. But when you zoom out and you look at things on a 5-10 year, that's minutes. So money printing and money getting easier all around the world all at once, right? We see M2 money supply going up. Now the rate's going down. Those two things are going to create a lot of liquidity. If we buy more gas, the Saudis will just raise the rates. We don't have more truckers. The supply chain is still choked. There's conflict in the Middle East that's causing shipping lines to go around. They're 30 to 35% longer. That uses more fuel. So this inflation will create distortions in the economy as relative pricing begins to become unreliable. So you're going to see malinvestment like we've saw so many times before. Resources will get misallocated. Price signals will be wrong. And this is where holding real Bitcoin, not an ETF, is really your only protection from this. There's really nothing else in the market you can buy that protects you from this debasement that all of these central Western governments and banks are about to participate in. There's nothing you can really do except for hold actual Bitcoin. Because if you have the ETF, while it's easy and there's going to be lots of products based around that, including, I'm sure, collateral loan products, you're just cashing out into the system. At the end of the day, you're just getting cash or whatever your local fiat is, which is just getting debased and made worthless. Where, you know, with Bitcoin, perhaps you're holding it for a long time, but at the end of that, you have something that is divorced of this system. Unlike anything else, unlike real estate is still very much tied in. I'm not saying it's not a good investment, but it is. Let's be real. And gold, I think, probably not the person to ask about that. I think there's a lot of people that probably aren't going to get that gold when they go to ask for it. So we have ourselves a situation here. We are 100 days into these Bitcoin ETFs, 100 days into them being a thing, like as of 2 days ago. So I guess 102 days or something like that. They now hold around 860,000 Bitcoin. They're almost to 1 million Bitcoin within 100 days. That's all of the ETFs combined. BlackRock leads the pack now. So they're almost to 1 million Bitcoin. There are approximately 1.5 million Bitcoins left to be mined ever for the rest of time. So maybe within 200 days, you know, that's where they'll be at. So they have around roughly 5% of the total supply of Bitcoin now. And I said, like I said, BlackRock's the leader there. So my question to you, and I'd like you to boost in with this, is how much Bitcoin is too much for these ETFs to own? You know, there's an upside. It makes it more scarce. So it makes your bag worth more. But is there too much? I'd like you to boost in your thoughts. Because if you think about it, 1.5 million Bitcoin left to be mined. And they are almost to 1 million right now within the first 100 days. And they're getting it at such a good price, too. That's, I think, the thing that kind of drives me crazy. Is they're getting it at such a good price. They know this thing's going to pump like crazy. And they're going to stack nearly 1 million coins below 100,000. It just doesn't seem fair, you know? It just doesn't seem fair. Like, they should have to pay 1 million a coin. And they're getting it at such a discount. And they're gonna just have bags loaded with cheap Bitcoin. So the profit margin on that stuff is just going to be absolutely astronomical. And that will start to sell Bitcoin itself. And this is the course I think this takes. The first wave of early adopters, individual retail, more cutting edge businesses, a couple of the fund managers, they are buying in right now in this first 100 days. That's who's bought in. But consensus very much is the next wave of buyers are all those big pension funds and all of these more, I guess you'd call them conservative investors, where they're going to start looking at 1% and 4% and 5% allocations, like the Wisconsin Retirement Fund just did. They're going to just look at it and say, well, we need it for diversification purposes. It'll become, when these numbers start getting where they're at, it's going to become irresponsible. Because the other problem they have is that if you look at the S&P 500, it's really seven companies that are driving all of that price action, and most of it's actually all NVIDIA. It's an S&P 500 with seven companies running everything. Well, if you're managing the retirement fund for a state, does that make you comfortable? You're probably looking for a well-performing, diversified asset not necessarily tied to the stock market or any particular business or government. It's pretty rare. That's exactly what Bitcoin is. So it's going to make these ETFs so popular with these kinds of investors over the remainder of this year and next year. And as you have to imagine, liquidity goes up. People start to feel a little rich. They don't feel quite as tight anymore. They start investing these kinds of things, and the price just starts to escalate and escalate, assuming things don't blow up in the wider macro economy. But that's the way, that's the route I see these ETFs going, which will be a validating process. The banks are front running your average Joes out there right now. That's what we're watching. If you held Bitcoin before the ETFs launched, you just front ran BlackRock and Fidelity and all the others. Great job. You should be really proud of that, actually. But the reality is BlackRock and Fidelity and Bitwise and all the other ones, they're front running the average Joes right now. This is what happens with assets. But as they do this, they're going to start offering products with these ETFs built in, like retirement packages or maybe loans backed with an ETF collateral. Things that are popular to the average consumer. And plus that price action is going to be pretty popular too. And I think that is the process that begins to take Bitcoin from this, oh, crypto, it's a scam or it boils the ocean, to a acceptable investment product for these everyday folks. Like you and I, we might be hodling it because we want to hedge against this entire system collapsing. But they're trying to hodl it because they don't know what's going on exactly, but all they know is their dollar doesn't get what it used to get. In fact, it seems to get about 25% less than it got even just a couple of years ago. And they can see that in real time happening. And if inflation starts to come back again, which it likely will be, because you don't just start making money loose and increasing the M2 supply without a repercussion, people are going to be looking for, once again, another way to protect themselves from 8, 9, 10% inflation numbers. And Bitcoin's going to look really attractive in that dynamic. And it's really hard to go on about the energy use of Bitcoin while you're also baking AI into everything. And you want everybody to buy EVs. And you want us to heat our homes with electric heat. Right? So there's a conversation around energy and investments and the dollar that just has to be had. And the average Joe, they don't really understand it, but they can feel the edges of it. And Bitcoin's going to appeal to those people. But it's going to be marketed to them. Try not to throw up in your mouth. It's going to be marketed to them by the banks. Right? Because they're going to front run all these guys. The banks will. Then they're going to develop these products that pull the average consumers in that are sparkly, and they're going to start selling it to them. And they're going to start marketing it to them. And they'll get the new programming. They'll slowly but surely update the programming. And then the normies will be aping into ETFs as well. So then what? Again, I ask you, is there too much? How much Bitcoin owned by the ETFs is too much? I think it's a question I don't normally think about, but when I see these numbers in the last 100 days, and I think what the next 100 days are going to do, especially as number go up as the number one marketing for Bitcoin, I have to wonder. Let me know your thoughts. I appreciate it. Moving on. Coming up, I asked you for your hardware wallet suggestions. We'll get to some of those. We have some boosts. I have some mining news and a few updates on projects that I want you to know about. This is all coming up, plus the song of the week. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, Podhome.fm. Podhome.fm is my podcasting 2.0 platform of choice. And if you use the promo code TWIB, you'll get the first 3 months for free. You get unlimited shows, unlimited episodes, and it's all powered by unlimited Podhome AI. What does the AI do? Good question. Is it a gimmick? No. Transcribes your podcasts, creates chapters for you, can produce clips, can even suggest episodes and titles. You don't have to use it. But I know how it feels when you're all done editing and producing. You're a little zapped. It's nice to have something take care of the chapters and have something that takes care of the titles. And Podhome is the easiest podcasting 2.0 platform to get into live streaming, with audio streaming built right in. And the UI makes it simple to add remote items like value for value music tracks, That's how I do my value splits at the end of the show when we play a Podcasting 2.0 song. Podhome focuses on solving these things and making publishing easy. It feels like you got a whole team. Try out podhome.fm, promo code TWIB. And thank you to Podhome for sponsoring This Week in Bitcoin. Appreciate you. All right, so we got some great boosts I'd like to get into this week, so let's start with those. Oh, and we have ourselves a baller right here off the top, and it is from the Podfather himself. He boosted in with 30,000 sats. Hey! Just wanted to say love the show, and he also sent 5,000-ish, well, 90% of 5,000 sats to our artist that week for the song. Thank you, Podfather, for the streaming of the sats and for the double boost. Appreciate that. And appreciate everything you do with the Podcasting 2.0 ecosystem. You know, Adam and Dave took action. I saw what Spotify was doing, and I went on the air and I complained about it. They took action and created the Podcasting 2.0 project, and it's going to change podcasting. It's going to save the world, man. Go check it out. You can go search for the Podcasting 2.0 show if you're interested in what's going on behind the scenes and you want to get an ear in on the boardroom. Hybrid Sarcasm comes in with 20,000 sats. Thank you, Hybrid. He says, just showing some love for TWIB. You know what, sir? Boom. You get that. You know, you got that in just in time, I have to say. I was just about to start recording and I saw your boost come in. Thank you very much. Appreciate that, Hybrid. You're great. People rave about you in the community. They say you're a legend, you know. That's what they say about you. Podhome comes in. Hey, Podhome, with 12,900 sats. Maybe your best episode yet. I love the macro overview. It helps inform my decisions. Keep up the great work. And maybe I'm just being a silly noob here, but what about Ledger for cold storage? Pew, pew, pew. So the Ledger products are pretty good-ish, depending on your needs. So why I didn't necessarily recommend Ledger right away, and they do have, I think, a Bitcoin-specific product, but when I'm thinking about long-term storage of life-changing wealth that I'd like to pass on maybe or you know, at least have access to for 30 years, I want the simplest, cleanest implementation of a product possible. And the Ledger stuff is designed to support multiple blockchains, multiple cryptos, to interface with their seemingly nice software. That's all stuff that works today and probably will for a, you know, five decades, probably for 5 years to a decade, but 3 decades, 30 years, you know, like, do you want all that? It seems like a lot of complex code, extra attack surface. I mean, all of those different cryptos are a lot to implement, right? So I'm not super familiar. I have a Ledger actually, and I'm such a cold card snob that I actually have not spent the time. But here's how they pitch it. Now, I think they do have a Bitcoin-specific one, but here's how they pitch it. They say, buy, exchange, and grow and manage over 5,500 coins and tokens. ColdCard just does Bitcoin, right? Just does Bitcoin. And as you know, Barry, as a developer, like, the more complicated the code base, the more it is to maintain, the bigger the team, the more there is for error, or maybe this particular chain isn't your expertise, and so who knows what you're introducing. You know what I mean? It's just, it's a big unknown. But if you have multiple different cryptos, i.e. if you're not just all in on Bitcoin, then it could be worth considering. If you want to secure that stuff. And so I don't want to dissuade you from doing that. And if people have a counter opinion, again, I'm not Mr. Expert on it. Please do boost in and let me know. The Golden Dragon comes in with a row of ducks. He says, boost, the worldwide macro situation pushes me further into Bitcoin daily. From invasive governments to being priced out of so much, we need this tool. Yeah, Bitcoin, I agree. Well put. I think that's why I do like to follow the macro picture myself, is it helps inform the Bitcoin decision. And from understanding why Bitcoin is superior money, you can see the flaws in the rest of the system. It's fascinating because otherwise you're always trying to figure out what's going on from within the system. Bitcoin gives us a lens to sort of come above it or, I don't know, look outside of it and understand what's so broken. Crashmaster comes in, Rodux, says, I just wanted to send something besides my usual streaming to keep it all going. And Podverse, ain't too bad on Android. It keeps improving. That's great to hear. Very good. And Crashmaster, I appreciate that. It is nice just to hear from you from time to time. The streaming is a delight. If you can imagine, you sit back and you look at your dashboard and you see these sats streaming in, it's really a remarkable thing as a creator because I can see the number in the downloads. I've been doing this for a long time. That's never really done it for me. But the boosts, the sats, it's the closest I've ever gotten to the same kind of satisfaction I get from meeting the listeners in person. I don't know. It's like, it's because it's sats, because it's a real thing and it's direct value. It's like that same, it makes those same kind of connections in my brain. And talk about something that keeps you going after all these years, right? And it's not practical for me to go to meetups all the time. So it is nice to hear from you in message form as well. And it's super nice to see those streaming sats too, because it's just like a little, I don't know, it's like you're out there. It's like I'm connected to you. DPG comes in with 3,333 sats.
Make it so.
All right. Hey, Chris, loving the show. My Bitcoin stacking strategy right now is very KYC'd. I have a portion of my paycheck deposited directly to Swan. It then gets automatically cashed out to my cold card when it reaches a million sat limit. I buy in smaller increments of Bitcoin. When I do, it's usually through the Cash App. I can't say I recommend this setup if you care about KYC, but it's pretty uncomplicated. So with DPG, I do like that Swan allows you to essentially give them, a list of addresses, an XPub that they can send to, and then you can have every million sats, they just automatically send to a new address. I would argue, perhaps, DPG, that a million might be a little low, maybe not. Something to consider. Hopefully not. Hopefully it's plenty. And then the other thing is, you could break the tracking to a degree by swapping into Liquid, but you're never going to be able to undo the fact that Swan has that register. If you want to just set it and forget it, this is one of the nicest setups. Something like River, Swan, they will do this as well. And the advantage is that they just do an ACH transfer. They take that money, they set it aside, they just do that DCA purchase, that daily cash average purchase, and then they just have a user set threshold. And when it meets that threshold, it just automatically sends it to your wallet. Your cold card doesn't have to be online to receive the transaction. It can, when it comes back on, it scans the blockchain. You get updates from whatever client you're using, and it sees it. But the IRS knows about every purchase. I don't really think you should be in Bitcoin to avoid the taxes, to be honest with you. Just like I don't think it's a good idea to get in real estate or gold or silver to avoid taxes. That's just not a great strategy. So if you're buying Bitcoin primarily as, a savings, a retirement, or, an investment of some kind, I just don't really see KYC being a huge barrier. Boost in if you think I'm wrong, but to me, it's sort of like, if you're planning to use it as retirement money, for example, you're going to be buying things within the system. You're going to be paying taxes anyways. Now, if you're looking to like leave the country and you want to run away or you want to be off the grid, totally different set of requirements. That's a different conversation. But I'd be curious to know if you want to share where you're at on that. Dexor comes in with 9,134 sats.
B-O-O-S-T.
I haven't listened yet, but I saw the notification. I realized I forgot to boost last week. So I just wanted to remind you, keep it up. I'm pretty sure there is many of us out here listening every week that can't boost or forgot like I do. The show is instantly moved up to my number 4 spot of top 5 podcasts. Hey, all right. Lup is in the number 1 spot. Cheers. Oh, thank you. Wow. Jeez. That is, that's really nice to hear. That's really nice to hear. Thank you. Moving it up. Maybe I'll even get number 3 one day. I have a Tangem, T-A-N-G-E-M, hardware wallet. A few months ago, I got that, and so far, so good. I haven't sent too many transactions, but everything I've done has worked without issue. Well, thank you for the field report. Appreciate that, Dex. Jordan Bravo comes in with 5,432 sats.
Smoke if you got them.
This is a tried. I've tried quite a few hardware wallets, and the cold card is great. Foundation's Passport is also really solid, as is the Keystone. I also prefer to call them hardware signing devices. It just makes more sense to my brain. Yes, that does make more sense, Jordan Bravo. That's a great point. Also, so we just heard from the Foundation Passport and the Keystone. What Jordan's saying there is the way these will work, say, in transaction with a software wallet, is they're really signing the transactions and generating some of that cryptography that's necessary to verify that it's okay to do so. You're not storing the Bitcoin on a hardware wallet. The Bitcoin lives on the blockchain. It's your key to get to that Bitcoin. And so that's what these devices are doing. And the difference is between a hot wallet or a cold card or a cold wallet is that if you had everything just on the computer, somebody could open that, could get access to that software and could just send your Bitcoin without a second physical device signing and permitting that. So the signing device is probably the appropriate term, but You know, I also think if we're really going to get into the weeds here, I don't think we should have called it mining Bitcoin. I get it. We did it for the analogy to gold. But I think it got the environmental movement against Bitcoin from the start. Could have been creating Bitcoin, I think would have been the way to go. I know it sounds silly, but if you think about it, the first time I heard this suggested, I thought that person was an idiot. But then I started thinking about it. Language matters. And if we would have said producing Bitcoin, maybe people would look at it a little bit differently. I don't know. Growing Bitcoin? What do you think? You got a term? You tell me. Oppie1984 comes in with 4,000 sats.
This is the way.
And just says, boost!
B-O-O-S-T!
All right. Thank you, Oppie. Appreciate that. Ace Ackerman comes in with a row of ducks. Value for value, episode 12. Thank you, sir. Appreciate seeing you.
This is the way.
As you too. Wartime comes in with 3,333 sats.
The traders love the vol.
And just is a cheers emoji. Well, cheers to you. I appreciate that. Usura CC is just, I think, the first time I'm hearing from you. Comes in with 4,096 sats.
Fun will now commence.
He says, I love the Trezor from Satoshi Labs. I have a Model T that has the secret sharing and touchscreen. Unlike Cold Card, it's truly open source, which is important to me, he says. No funny business with the... quote, source viewable and similar shenanigans. I agree with you there. I think, you know, experience has taught that the Cold Card is a great product, but the source viewable, it's kind of like a Band-Aid. It would be nice to have. I know there's a whole drama there, too. We don't really need to get into. But so the Trezor, the Model T, which has a, sounds like a nice little product. Cospelin comes in with 15,000 sats.
That's not possible. Nothing can do that.
This might be a Bitcoin dad question, but are you aware of any on-chain analysis going? I want something with nice graphs, perhaps. I'd like to look at how the stats are UTX flow and are stored to keep track of my non-mixed or looped-in, looped-out, sent to hardware wallet, etc., etc. Preferably a web GUI to scan local node and specific addresses and show a nice Mercurial tree graph or something like that. Thanks for all your work. Well, Koss, I'm going to assume you know about... mempool, the mempool.space tool. And of course you could host that on your own node as well. And you can put transactions in there and follow some of that. But I will link to two tools I have used. I don't know if they're quite addressing what you want, so you'll have to let me know. But blockchain.com has a lot of tools around charting and searching. And I'll link you to kind of that. You have to get into like one of their subcategories, but they got a screen there to let you do that. And then another one is Blockonomics. And you give them a specific UTXO. It's blockonomics.co. You give them a specific UTXO, and then they will show you the history and all the data they have on that. That might be what you're looking for. And again, that's blockonomics.co. I will put a link to that in the show notes. So if you want to go check it out, you can. I don't know if that quite gets what you're going for. I don't know if I got to it or not. But if I didn't, let me know. And I'd be curious to see other tools out there that people find interesting. So that's all the boosts we got above the 2,000 sat cutoff, but thank you, everybody. We had 18 boosters. I read everyone's boost. We stacked 121,082 sats. Not too bad. Out here in the woods stacking sats. Thank you, everybody. Do appreciate that. This is a Value for Value podcast. If the coverage here helps you frame the world a little bit better, gives you some sort of insights or information or makes you think, and you got some value out of that, please do boost in. Also, I really appreciate all the knowledge sharing. Like with the example with the wallets or the stacking, I have gotten multiple notes from people saying that stuff is really, really helpful to them. So please do keep sending all of that in. Really appreciate all of the boosts out there.
And now, as the French say, it is time for le boost.
Well, it was time for the boost. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate you. All right, so let's talk about mining. Things are seemingly heating up. Riot Platforms has ended up acquiring 9.25% in Bitfarms. But that's following what seems to be an extremely dramatic rejected takeover offer. So Bitfarms declined Riot's $950 million acquisition offer. And then there was like a kerfuffle with Bitfarms' CEO getting fired. It seems like there was basically an attempted hostile takeover, Riot attempting to take over Bitfarms, from what I can tell from the outside, including... executives getting fired, all of this going down, and then the takeover failing and Riot ending up with 9.25% of a stake in Bitfarms. So that happened last week. I was kind of tracking that, thinking that was interesting. But today, as I record, another buyout situation went down. This one also rejected, but it has an AI twist.
Core Scientific just rejected a buyout from AI firm CoreWeave. The Bitcoin miner said in a press release that CoreWeave sent an unsolicited proposal on June 3rd, offering to buy all of Core Scientific's outstanding shares for about $5.75 a share, or a little bit more than $1 billion. Core said that the board partnered with independent advisors to evaluate the proposal, but felt that it undervalued the company based on its near and long-term potential. The proposal from CoreWeave came just after the two companies announced a series of 12-year contracts to provide 200 megawatts of infrastructure for CoreWeave. And for some context, this attempted acquisition points to a larger trend that JP Morgan mentioned in a report out yesterday. An analyst for the bank said that AI firms could see Bitcoin miners as attractive M&A targets thanks to their readily available power supply with cheap energy contracts.
I thought that bit was a bit interesting. So AI companies with lots and lots of funding are looking to buy out Bitcoin mining operations, not to run their Bitcoin mining operation, but to basically gobble up their power contract. We could see, if AI continues to pump, we could see an interesting conflict arise there because the Bitcoin network has such a massive head start. But AI is hungry and well-funded. If anybody out there has insights into the mining industry, get in contact with me either on the contact page or send me a boost. I really want to cover the mining industry with a lot more insights and information, but it's a pretty hard industry to follow from the outside. Well, we weren't sure which way this would go down, but it seems President Joe Biden has vetoed the SAB 121 repeal. Joe Biden vetoed the resolution that would have overruled the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission's staff accounting bulletin. That's what the SAB stands for. Now, this bulletin was introduced by the SEC. It's not necessarily something that became law. It never got voted on. In fact, the process was a little questionable, which is why I think we saw so much support in the House and the Senate to overrule this. However, Biden wrote an official letter on May 31st in his response to Congress. He said, quote, well, I don't know if he wrote this, but the White House wrote, quote, the reversal of the considered judgment of the SEC staff in this risks undercutting the SEC's broader authority regarding accounting practices. In other words, my read of that is they didn't want this overturned because they didn't want to set a precedence of chipping away at the SEC's authority, which has been a thing that's happening a lot recently. Biden had initially threatened to veto this, but then people thought with the pivot and change in tone around crypto, he might change his mind, especially considering the overwhelming support it had by Democrats. But it seems that is not the case. All right, I have a resource of the week for you, and then a final clip and some music. I want to give a plug to Simplex, or Simple X, which has version 5.8 out this week. And Bitcoiners should seriously consider using this. This is truly the real private chat application. No shade to Signal or Telegram, but this is really the solution out there if you're looking for private messaging. And they've just introduced private message routing. Similar to how kind of Tor works, actually. Not using Tor, but similar. It allows to route messages and media with no one in between and no one on either end, exposing the identity of the remote participant. They have a really, really great blog post on how this works. Additionally, in 5.8, they've improved group chat. They've improved some of the communication protocol there for members that are inactive to use less resources. SimpleX doesn't require a phone number, and it's, I think, the most private secure messaging platform. I think it's ideal for families, too, that just want something private, don't want to necessarily have your kids get a phone number. For good little, like, side event chats, sure, or, group work chats, absolutely. We use it here, and I just don't think it gets enough attention. I think too much of the conversation's about Signal, maybe Telegram and some of the others. Simplex is out there just every week getting better and better. And version 5.8 is really a banger. And I just wanted to give it the plug it deserves. And our last story of the week. I don't really know what this means other than I think it's going to pump some sort of crypto altcoin. Citadel Securities and BlackRock announced a Texas stock exchange project. BlackRock and Citadel plan to launch a new national stock exchange in Texas to compete with the New York Stock Exchange. It'll be I think at least the group that's putting it together right now is headquartered in Dallas. I'm not sure if that's where the exchange will be. They've already raised $120 million, and they have the support of 24 investors. The Wall Street Journal reported on the endeavor earlier this week, saying the exchange is billing itself as a, quote, more CEO-friendly alternative to the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ. And it says they're pitching it as – or they say, I'm sorry, they're pitching it as a, quote, fully electronic national securities exchange that will seek regulation of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Now, here's why I think this is actually going to pump something like Ethereum or Solunar or ZERP. Is because the CEO of BlackRock, Larry Fink, has been on TV before. I never really thought it was necessary to play this clip. But Larry sees a world where we tokenize everything. The CEO of BlackRock wants to tokenize everything. And they, how would they do that? They'd have to use some kind of altcoin. They're not going to do that using Bitcoin.
We believe the next step going forward will be the tokenization of financial assets. And that means every stock, every bond will have its own basically CUSIP.
Have you heard of RWAs yet? Real world assets on blockchain? So this is part of it, I think. He doesn't come out and say this, but I think they want to tokenize RWAs as well. Real world assets on a blockchain managed through an exchange that they run in Texas. That sounds like quite the moneymaker to me, buddy.
It means every stock, every bond will have its own basically CUSIP. It'll be on one general ledger. Every investor, you and I, will have our own number, our own identification.
Oh, how great. Our own number, our own identification. Hello, 1785332.
We could rid ourselves of all issues around illicit activities about bonds and stocks and digital by having a...
And digital. Illicit activity around bonds, stocks. Interesting, those are his first two. And then digital. And you're going to do that by tokenizing it and having it digital.
Around illicit activities about bonds and stocks and digital by having a tokenization. But the most importantly thing, we can customize strategies through tokenization that fits every individual. We would have instantaneous settlement. Think about all the costs of settling bonds and stocks. Mm. But if you had a tokenization, everything would be immediate because it's just a line item. And so we believe this is a technological transformation for financial assets. I believe if you want to talk about voting and voting choice and all the things, if we know every moment who is the owner of that stock and it's now time to vote, every individual who has ownership is identified and they can vote their own share.
It just sounds wonderful, doesn't it? And it's not going to be on top of Bitcoin. So whatever it's going to be on top of when that comes out, you know, because it just seems like they're cooking something. Because I've heard him give this speech a couple of times in different interviews. So I think they're cooking something. Then you see this news about this new exchange of theirs, this, quote, fully electronic exchange that is, quote, more CEO friendly. And they say that what they mean is they're aware that the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ is, quote, overregulated. You love watching them cook, though, don't you? Don't you kind of? I mean, because, like, as long as you got your Bitcoin stash, you're good, right? This isn't going to hurt you. But it is going to pump some altcoin for a bit. And it's just kind of like, which one and how badly is it? And is that why they're pushing for an Ethereum ETF? I wonder. Well, I'm going back to the woods. So if nothing happens major, I may take the week off. But of course, if news breaks, I'll be here with the story. If there's something to tell you about, I'll be here live from the woods. I'd love this to be your number one Bitcoin news podcast. So any suggestions you have to make it better, if you got a friend you could share it with. And I think it could be the go-to Bitcoin news podcast for the podcasting 2.0 community that is trying to wrap their head around news that impacts value for value. Now, with that, I'll just plug This Week in Bitcoin.show. You'll have links over there for episode 13, what I talked about today. And I'm going to wrap it up with one of the top songs in the Value for Value verse right now. So I'm not going to blow you away with something you may have not heard yet. I'm not like picking an undiscovered one here yet. I'm going with like one of the bangers right now in the Value for Value verse. It is Red Light by Tony Solomon. Thanks for being here. See you in episode 14.
Concrete, ooh, now I'm running with a black guy. Smile face on a stranger. it in my mouth.